It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Recently, President Obama signed a bill eliminating the descriptors Oriental and Negro from federal documents. And this measure sailed through Congress before he signed it. In fact, it was unopposed in Congress, a rare example of bipartisan agreement in this election year. The words will be replaced with Asian Americans and African Americans. This first half hour, we want to talk a little bit about those words, how they evolved to carry the baggage they have today, to talk about how these and other words change to become official outcasts. We'd like to have you join our conversation. Does it matter to you that Oriental and Negro will no longer be used in federal documents? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. Joining us for this first half hour, Mae Nye is with us, Lung Family Professor of Asian American Studies and Professor of History at Columbia University. Professor Nye, Mae, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Neil Lester is with us, the Director of Project Humanities and Foundation Professor of English at Arizona State University. Professor Lester, Neil, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
I would just like to, before we dig down a little deeper on these two terms, descriptors, I'd like to have you give us briefly your reactions as an Asian American and as an African American. Mae, would you go first? Is this long overdue?
Well, I think it is, and it's a welcome change. It's symbolic, of course, but nobody wants to be insulted, even if it's symbolically.
Mm-hmm. Okay, quickly, for people saying, I don't understand, what is the problem with Oriental?
Well, if you think about Oriental, it means Eastern, and since the world is round, you have to be in a certain place to think of Asia as being to the east, and that place is Europe. So the Orient is really an invention of Europe to describe Asia, and they did that in order to contrast what they thought was Oriental to what they thought was European. So it was always a term that was a Eurocentric term. It was always a term that defined the West as being superior to the East. It was not just directional, but it was also a relational kind of concept. So it's a term that has always been freighted with ideas of inferiority.
Neil Lester, tell us about Negro and why its time has come to leave federal documents for sure.
Well, I can see the updating of language to show sort of an evolution of how African Americans, black people are named and are naming themselves. But I was a bit surprised because it doesn't quite capture a historical moment where it was, in fact, embraced by organizations like the NAACP and even the United Negro College Fund. So I guess I was a little surprised because it doesn't seem for me to be in the same category as, say, Oriental or Indian.
Mm-hmm. So what is the rationalization? Negro is not a neutral term. Is it disparaging or is it simply outdated, and how?
Well, I guess it's I sense from the conversation that it's outdated. But it still doesn't resonate in the same way that the word color did, which was sort of the mid-19th century descriptor. And I think it's interesting because as we're talking about language, we're also talking about how people are treated in the country. So I guess the updating makes sense, you know, but for African Americans, that naming has been so complicated. We're back and forth, we're capitalizing, we're lowercasing, we're doing all these kinds of things in order to name ourselves. But the treatment that is somehow signified, or the name signifies, I think is what complicates this for African Americans, for black people.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, I just remember in the late 80s, when Jesse Jackson, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, some of the other prominent black leaders got together to decide to call black people African Americans, that was really something that was only dealt with among those who were part of academia or part of the media, that in terms of regular, you know, straight out of the streets black people, that it didn't matter what the name was. It was how people were being treated in this country.
Mm-hmm. What does Negro mean to the average, if I can put this on you, I don't know if you made a survey, but the average African-American, what does Negro mean?
Well, it certainly connotes and denotes a certain historical moment and a naming. But I see great pride that many feel when you talk about the accomplishments of the NAACP, which still uses the advancement of colored people. I think it's what it represents historically is not the same as the word colored, where there is this clear disparagement between, you know, the Jim Crow America and the America that we have now.
Mm-hmm. So colored people, that term colored,
yes,
has its roots in our slave history.
Correct.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, in this whole sense of evolving from black to colored, to Afro-Americans, to African-Americans, to Negro, I think has represented a kind of, I don't want to say use ableist language, but a kind of schizophrenia in terms of how black people have been treated in this country and the extent to which black people can name ourselves and when we're named by others. But the treatment of black people and those, whether you are of African descent or not, has been consistent in this country. And I think that's the issue, is how does the identity match how you're being treated in this country?
Join our conversation as we talk about words that have been cast out of federal documents, at least by a recent bill signing. President Obama passed through Congress unopposed, Negro and Oriental no longer in federal documents. Does it matter to you? 1-866-780-9100. Back to May Nye, tell us, now Oriental, the sense that I got from you briefly is that Oriental, if someone would describe you in a casual setting at a party, if someone would use that term, Oriental, to describe another person, what would you say? Would you feel the need to correct?
I might say, we don't call ourselves that today. We say Asian American, or I'm of Chinese descent, so I would say I'm a Chinese American. But I might not say anything either. If the person was elderly and came from a different period, they may not mean it with offense, and so I may not take it that way. It depends on the situation. I agree with our other guests that, you know, naming is something that is both important and maybe not so important. What's more important is how we're treated, right? What kind of policies we have, what kind of anti-discrimination laws we have, what kind of racism exists in the structures of our society. Those are the really important things. And I think these terms also, they do have historical background. So Oriental was in some ways, it was derogatory, but it was also in a similar way that Negro was in a certain era, also a polite term, okay, as opposed to being called yellow.
Right.
Right.
There's
so,
certainly worse words in the past.
There's worse words. So, for example, you know, we can see among African Americans how it's quite acceptable to talk about black people, right? Black folks talk about themselves as black people, right? But Asians don't like to be called, or we don't call ourselves yellow. Right, so it's all very specific in terms of the history of these things. So Oriental was definitely more polite than yellow, and it was more polite than, say, coolie, which was a kind of slur, which was kind of like calling somebody a slave. You know, so these different terms arise at different historical moments in different racial contexts and different social contexts. So I think Oriental is one of those things where when I was growing up in the 1960s, we considered this deeply offensive to be called an Oriental. Nowadays, if I meet an elderly person and they say Oriental, I don't necessarily take offense because, mm-hmm, you know, at a certain time, it was a more polite word than other words.
Neil Lester, tell us about May Nye just pointed out that yellow, of course, did not become a way to describe an Asian, but black became a way to describe an African American with pride. How did that happen?
That wasn't always the case, though, because
right,
black
right.
was right. Black people didn't want to be called black; they wanted to be called Negro. And I think that there were moments around the civil rights movement where "Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud" became the mantra, and it has stayed to some extent. But I'll add here that perhaps of all the designations around identity, black is still contested. I mean, we talk about having our first black president, but our first black president is just as much white as he is black. So even that definition of blackness doesn't quite fit reality as we've constructed it around race. So I think when people talk about black, and as we start talking about the browning of America, that even that doesn't quite get at what people may actually see themselves as, but it certainly becomes a convenient way of labeling a certain historical moment that was as illogical with the one drop rule as the Jim Crow laws were.
Neil Lester, you finished that?
I don't think that even if we talk about black, that it's quite as neat and tidy a label as we'd like to think it is.
Exactly. It just as white is also not very clear exactly what is white, right?
Right. And I think we have a caller on the line listening to the program from the Quad Cities. Seth is wanting to address that point exactly. Aren't you, Seth? What's your question? Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. I just wanted to kind of get the your guest's insight onto, we talk about people that are not of European descent, generally speaking, by their, cultural groups, but don't we, in doing so, often take them out of the mainstream? So, when we talk about mainstream American culture, we often assume that it's predominantly white, whereas we divide other groups into different categories. So I wanted to hear what they thought, even using those terms at all, how that affects how we talk about our population as a whole, I guess.
Okay. Who wants to
I'll say two things about that, if I may. First, I think so-called mainstream American culture, I think, is actually quite diverse these days. Mm-hmm. Maybe there was a time when, high culture was considered European, but popular culture certainly is not, quote-unquote, white today. It's very mixed. It's very diverse, and it draws, a lot of white kids listen to, quote, white kids listen to, quote, black music.
Yes.
So I'll say that. But on the other question, I think here's the problem with naming and having names to denote different racial or ethnic groups. Once you name a group as being something other than a majority group, you set up a problem because you distinguish them as being different. So that is a problem. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, as long as people are treated differently, and as long as we have institutional and social structures that treat people differently based on perceptions of racial difference, then the naming also serves a purpose to identify racism and to push back against it and to claim a more positive identity for our communities than the ones that are imposed upon us from without. So it's always a kind of double-edged sword. I would prefer that the census didn't have a racial category, that we didn't single out people and name them this or that. On the other hand, if you stop that completely, you leave people in a very difficult position in terms of fighting for social justice and racial equality. This is a conundrum that I personally have not figured out. I don't know if anybody's really figured that one out.
Neil Lester, you want to jump in there. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting because the work that I've done on, say, the one-drop rule, I mean, there was certain arbitrariness to identifying who was black, but what was clear is that black was not white. And to me, it never made sense to figure out how one drop could somehow taint the other 99 drops. But I understood that from the slave owner's perspective as an economical way of doing business on the plantation. However, what didn't make sense was when black men and women were free and they had access to white women, and then that became sort of negative and became something that was more disparaging. And so what doesn't make sense is this sort of naming that is somehow based in other areas where social justice certainly has to play out when you're talking about, okay, well, who's actually benefiting from the policies that exist and how do the policies need to be changed. So I can certainly understand why we need the boxes, but there is an arbitrariness. And if you notice, the boxes continue to be to become more plentiful now. There are lots more boxes to choose from. So
everything is
not black and white now. So we're trying to sort of catch up to where the identities are. And I think it's actually when you start talking about black again, it goes back to that sort of historical moment that made no sense, that the one drop meant that you were black, no matter how many white drops you had.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if either of you had any thoughts on guidelines that should be used to determine whether a term is outdated, a yardstick for other terms out there, perhaps mm-hmm. in official documents, if it's outdated, offensive, or otherwise, shouldn't be used. Any thoughts on rules that we can apply, a yardstick?
I think we just have to listen to our communities.
Yeah.
If a preponderance of our communities thinks something's offensive and outdated, then we should change it. Mm-hmm. But again, as I said in the beginning, I think these are not insignificant moves, but they're really symbolic.
Right.
And I think, you know, what we've been saying is what counts more is how people are treated.
Well, it's interesting to me that a lot of my work has been on the N-word, not the Negro word, but
mm-hmm.
the N-word.
Right. In fact, we need to mention, Lester, you teach an entire course on the N-word.
I created the course, and I've taught it 4 times, and now I write about teaching the course. That's something that hasn't changed. And even though we may say that if you spell the word differently with the G-A or the G-E-R or the whatever combinations, that somehow the base of that word hasn't changed. And the treatment of whether it's black people or other people of color still allows that name to be used no matter the circumstance. And it is not gendered. It is not always racialized. It has nothing to do with behavior because there are lots of children's books where that word was extremely common on commercial products. So in many ways, that naming has persisted, you know, from as early as the 1400s up through the present.
So if you
talk about names changing, that's one that has not changed, no matter what people say about, you know, hip-hop and the 1980s when we have allegedly taken it back and made it something else.
Right, and that's the point I wanted to get to. Neil Lester, you're at Arizona State University speaking to listeners in Iowa, one of the whitest, if I can say it that way, whitest states in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Why is the N-word used by some African Americans?
Well, I think there is a naivete about history. I think there's a naivete about this sense that particularly a younger generation seems to think that life is fine. We've realized a black, in quotation marks, president. People are not hanging from poplar trees, and there are no Jim Crow signs, but there's a kind of what we call the racism without racist that people don't quite see. And I think a lot of that is a disconnect from history. I think people don't know that those same spellings were used in minstrel songs, that those same spellings were used in the other ways in which black people in particular were disparaged in imagery, in illustrations, in pop culture. So the sense that you can take it back implies that you owned it. And I think what's different about this conversation that we're having now is the sense that black people are naming themselves as opposed to being named by someone else who
mm-hmm.
disparages us.
Let's say you, Lester, are in casual conversation as an African-American or among African-Americans, and
mm-hmm.
you hear that term used perhaps to someone else in the group, perhaps pointed at you. What do you say?
Well, first of all, I don't travel in circles where that is used, and
okay.
it becomes a choice. And that's what I say when I go into my conversations, whether they are public lectures or otherwise. I say this is about a choice. This is not like yelling fire in a crowded theater, but rather being able to think critically about what comes out of your mouth. And the way in which I witness these younger generations, and this is clearly not a binary between young and old, but it's a sense they really don't know what they are saying, and the fact that what they're saying is not different than what was said when masters and their slaves had these sort of endearing relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the disconnect, is a historical unawareness of what came before NWA and hip-hop. So I don't travel in those circles.
All right.
And what I say is that I'm not, my personal investment comes as a scholar and as a parent. So I have not been called that, but I say in what I've written is that my Italian spouse has been called an inward lover. My brown kids can be called that word, and it has nothing to do with what they've done. It has to do with, you know, how and when somebody wants to throw an atomic bomb at them, the ultimate one.
Mm-hmm. We have just a couple minutes left. I wanted to get your thoughts. Perhaps I can turn to you, May Nye, about the 2016 race and how perhaps language has been used, and we detect a backlash against political correctness as exhibited in language in this election campaign. Any thoughts on that, May Nye?
Well, the 2016 campaign has just confounded many of us. excuse me.
Yeah.
And language, unfortunately, has become unchained. And so we have some people who, excuse me. Sorry, I'm getting over a cough.
That's fine. Let me turn to.
People now think they can say anything they want. And I think this is very unfortunate for our whole society.
I'd like to add a comment to that because
sure.
I'm always concerned when that term political correctness is thrown out.
Sure.
Because it feels to me, at least in the privileged literature and research, that that's a microaggressive term. When we're talking about identity, then this is beyond political correctness. This is talking about, for example, when we're talking about indigenous mascots, for example, that many teams use. This is not just about being politically correct. This is about looking at the identity of those who are represented in those terms. So I'd like for us to move away from, I'd like for somebody to really define what politically correct means in order to further understand it, but it seems a rather dismissive or microaggressive term when somebody disagrees with someone saying, well, this matters to me because this is bigger than a word. It really represents my identity.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying anybody who uses the term, people who use political correctness in a certain way, it's a cue that they're against it, right?
Yes, or it's dismissing something. As opposed to trying to understand why and how this is connected to identity.
Okay. Can this go too far? Can we be too sensitive about words and descriptors? We have just a few seconds left. I'll leave you with
that. I think not. I think words become exactly, as someone has said, the skin of our thoughts. I think when we stop thinking about language, when we stop thinking about words, and we stop thinking. And it doesn't mean that words can capture everything that we experience, but it certainly needs to be something that we're more conscious of. And, you know, one of the things as an English teacher I recognize is people don't care about words now, but words matter. Words have always mattered.
Okay.
And words will continue to matter.
Fascinating. We have to go. Thank you so
words
much for
matter.
Joining us. May Nye, thank you very much. At Columbia University, May Nye, thank you for joining us. And
thank you.
Neil Lester of Arizona State University. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Coming up in just a moment, I talk with Michael Lind of the nonpartisan Washington think tank New America. He says the old political system is crumbling and the new one is being born. We'll find out in just a minute. It's River to River.